this heart of mine embraces all day through.
Joining us right now is one of the greatest, most wonderful jazz singers there is. She is, I've heard her many, many times, and it doesn't do justice on a CD. Sounds great on a CD, but you got to hear her in person because she's incredible. Rebecca Paris joins us. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Mark.
It's been a long time since I introduced you on a stage.
I guess so, huh?
Yeah, I think that was around 1985 or so.
Jeepers.
Long time ago.
How old did we get?
No, we've got younger, actually.
We got younger. That's good. That's good.
Both of us are younger than we were in 1985, which I think is a great achievement in itself.
I do, too.
Yeah. So you let's talk a little bit about your background for folks who don't know where you're from and where you learned to sing the way you do. Where were you from, and when were you exposed to music?
Well, my mother used to tell me that I came out with a microphone in my hand. So
my mother said the same thing. We probably were born in the same hospital.
There you go. Actually, I was born in Needham at Glover Hospital, and grew up in Newton. So I'm a dyed-in-the-wool New Englander.
Oh.
And I've lived various and sundry places in certain parts of my life, but always gravitated back home. And Massachusetts definitely is my home.
Now, were your parents musically inclined as well?
Oh, incredibly so. My father wore many hats. He was trying to keep three girls in competitive clothing in Newton schools, you know.
So he was working 12 jobs.
He was working five anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a church organist and choir director. He was a professor public speaking at Northeastern. He was a French professor at Boston Conservatory. He taught French and English at Winchester Schools, Belmont Schools, forever. So he was a full-time educator, but in the summers he did acting and singing in summer stock, and did a lot of theater work, directing and whatnot. And my mother was concert pianist and organist and a nursery school teacher full-time in the winter. So she was, that's where I got my weird sense of humor, which is definitely evident in my show, I think.
Now, you mentioned sisters. Are your sisters musically inclined as well?
They were. My middle sister was a wonderful dramatic soprano and was being groomed for the Met, but she really wanted a family, and that kind of doesn't gel.
Mm-hmm.
And my other sister, my eldest sister, was a music major at Baldwin Wallace in Ohio as a viola player and an oboist.
Mm.
And they both gave up their careers, so out of the three, I'm the one that stuck with it.
And you do have to stick with it.
Yeah, you do have to stick with it.
People don't realize the adversities you face, especially financially.
I always look at if we can all look at what most people think means that you make it, you know what I mean? I'm going to have a 45-year overnight success. It'll be great.
What would you consider making it?
Well, I'll tell you, I feel like I've arrived anyway because I make my full living through my music. I'm actually a homeowner. I have a wonderful family. I have two very loud dogs who I'm trying to escape at the moment. But I think that's really, you make it when you find a place in life that's happy and satisfying. all in the same, you know, bucket. You know, you need to be satisfied and creatively and intellectually and be comfortable somewhere, you know?
Yeah, I think that some people fall into the trap of feeling that they haven't made it till they win a Grammy or till they sell a million records or something, and they're really putting themselves into a trap that they can't really get out of too easily.
Yeah, I think people are very naive as to what goes into winning a Grammy and what goes into getting into that seriously upper echelon of performance renown. You know, it's not as talent due as it seems. And it's very, very money oriented, and it's a difficult thing to find. And if you don't have a couple of million bucks behind you, good luck.
I mean, Alison Krauss, who we had on the show many times, it's amazing from Rounder Records that she has, you know, been nominated for Grammy Awards and
mm-hmm.
things, and that's an incredible achievement. What label are you recording with?
I'm recording with Koch Jazz right now.
And where is that out of?
It's out of New York.
And do they do some good promotion for
they
you?
They do excellent promotion, and the CDs are everywhere. So we have a wonderful relationship with Koch.
Now, My Foolish Heart, is that out now? That's
yes.
a CD? It is.
Yes, that's the newest CD. It's a collection of 9 ballads. Very slow, very relaxing. I always guarantee from the stage when I'm trying to sell my CDs, you'll either get the best night's sleep of your life or your relationship at home will awaken.
And either one, there's nothing wrong with either one of them.
You know, isn't that nice?
Yeah, we can
always
use sleep.
It's a win-win thing there.
Exactly. Yeah, sounds pretty cool. When did you discover that you had a voice that was different than most?
Well, I started singing professionally when I was 6, but I was brought up with a lot of liturgical music since both my parents were church organist. So my
mm-hmm.
mother said I used to trailer around the house when I was 2 and sing all these fake hymns, and I'd make them up as I went along. I was singing as an adult voice when I was 8 years old, and singing, you know, like arias and oratorio when I was 7 and 8 years old with a full adult sound. So I was very strange as a child. I had a very, very large range, and could sing most anything, which was really quite advantageous when you go into doing cover material in a Holiday Inn circuit.
So did you end up doing like church music and actually perform?
I did church music. I did opera. I sang background on country and western. I did theater. I've done top 40 for. I did top 40 for years doing that hotel circuit. I've done vocalese, which is like a Manhattan Transfer type of thing with a four voice group called Reminiscence.
Mm-hmm.
I've done hard rock and roll. Which really almost killed me.
Yeah, that'll get you through.
Vocally, almost killed me. And
now, who did you do hard rock and roll with?
We had a band called Freestyle
that
started out as a top 40, you know, show band. And the guys all came to me one day and said, "We really want to go in this direction. Are you interested?" He said, "Well, my father always told me, he said, if you're going to pick one thing, get a very, very well-rounded education around that one thing."
Mm-hmm.
So I'd never done that kind of scream-in-your-face, hard, white rock and roll, and said, "Okay, I'll give you a year doing that. And if I like it, fine. If I don't, bye."
Huh.
And I literally had never listened to those kind of radio stations. I was never like a hard rock fan in school or anything like that. So I had to force feed myself the music for about a month. And I'm a testimony to the fact that you can get to like anything if it's fed to you enough.
Mm.
And I started doing that material and screaming on stage, and it almost killed me. So I really knew that I wasn't going to have a vocal career much longer if I kept it up. So I left that band and then went singing great songs again. It was like I was so bored with the material. It was starting to insult my intelligence to just have 3 words in a song and 2 chord changes, you know. So I went further on and landed in the idiom of jazz, which was, I think, was a natural progression, because it was songs. I was very much into the language. I'm very, very much into the language. I'm a crossword puzzle fanatic. I'm a poetry fanatic. I'm the daughter of an English professor, so it's kind of hard to get away from that.
Mm.
And the songs in the American Songbook were just so incredibly beautiful and universally written, and they, I call them standards because they stand on their own 2 feet. They have a full meaning, a good message, you know, beginning, middle, and end, and they stand alone. You can twist them in any way you want. They're still there. You can do them as a do one particular song as a bossa nova or a swing tune or a ballad, and it still stands up on its own 2 feet. There's no problem with that kind of music.
Yeah, I think that the classics are always classics, and whether it's something like Over the Rainbow or
yeah.
I'll Be Seeing You,
yeah.
When you do them, you give them a whole new twist, which is kind of nice.
Well, it's called personalization. You know, you have to be really experienced with that lyric and tell the truth about how you feel about it, and that is the key to your individual, your individualness, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that you are into poetry, as mm-hmm. I am as well, and I ended up writing some, and I assume that you might write some too. Do you ever write music?
Yes, I do. I'm a better collaborator than I am a solo writer.
Mm.
I'm a great troubleshooter as far as the lyric goes, and I've worked with several accompanists on that angle. I do write lyrics. I've written several things that are published and performed, and I do write.
Yeah. Now, have you recorded a lot of your own music?
Pardon me?
Have you recorded a lot of your own music?
I've recorded several of them, yes.
Yeah.
And other people have recorded several of them, so I feel fortunate that way.
Is it a special thrill to do your own music as opposed to someone else's?
It's interesting. There's all this ego stuff that comes out, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, oh, gosh, would they like it? Or, you know, I wonder if they're understanding what I mean. And because I think you're too attached to your own material sometimes.
Many singers, they move to L.A., they move to New York. Boston seems to be a hub now of some really good music. And I think that Keith Lockhart and the Boston Pops are a big reason people want to stay.
Well, I think that Keith has done a wonderful thing with the Pops in that, first of all, he's very youthful and can grab some of the younger audience, and he's not afraid to diversify on the stage at Symphony. You know, he's really not afraid to bring in, you know, a rap act or you know, I mean, anything that you want to hear. I mean, and can join it with the symphony, which is a really wonderful thing. You know,
mm.
to try and get us all to think in a universal format and enjoy learning about classical music or about jazz or about this, that, and the other thing. So I think he's done a wonderful thing that way.
Yeah. Have you thought at all about moving? Did you ever move to L.A. or New York?
I lived in New York for a while, and it's such a backbiting business. So I was going into the theater business. You know, I wanted to be Julie Andrews on Broadway.
mm-hmm.
But I was 6 foot tall, and the only leading man that would work was Tommy Toon, and he was already in a career. So it was a kind of tough struggle for me in New York. I did a lot of voiceovers, and I did a lot of auditioning. And it disappointed me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was very innocent when I moved to New York, and it was very disappointing. It was the people who are in the same position as me. There are millions of us that want to go and audition and get this one particular thing or get into a chorus line. So it's a lot harder than people think. If they've never tried it, they'll find out as soon as they do. So I moved back to Boston and quit the business, actually. I went to work in retail for about 6 months and said, I don't want to go after this as a business. It's too backbiting. And I was coerced, actually, in singing at a club one night, and the club owner offered the band the gig if they could get me. So,
wow.
So, and I think once you have the bug in this business, you can't really get rid of it. You can watch a whole lot of Tonight shows and see lesser performers or say, oh, I could do that, and
mm-hmm.
get very disgruntled with your quitting. So I don't think anybody can really quit this industry very easily.
Now, you can sublimate it, but you really can't get rid of it if it's in your
exactly.
blood. Exactly. Yeah, talking with Rebecca Paris, and again, if you would like to experience the full Rebecca Paris, the not just the voice you're hearing over right now, but the incredible stage presence, the stories, the humor, her wonderful personality comes out as well as her music. She will be performing February 8th through 10th at the Orpheum Theater in Foxborough. Have you performed there before?
No, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm doing a couple of these wonderful theaters over the next few months, and I just think it's great that they're bringing this kind of entertainment into the suburbs, which is important. A lot of people hate driving into town, and gee, I wonder why.
Mm.
Big dig, big dig. And or let's find a parking space, ha ha ha. And I think it's wonderful that some of the suburban venues are really taking entertainment seriously, and it's that's a wonderful thing. I'm really looking very much forward to it.
I've never been to the OFEM before, but I've heard some good things about it. And I know our reviewers from PMPnetwork.com have written some nice things about it as well.
Well, great.
And I'm sure we'll have a reviewer at your concert as well.
I'm sure.
And folks out there who want to get more information, if they want to get your CDs, can they pick them up at RebeccaParis.com?
They can find me at RebeccaParis.com and find out where. I do have my own record company, which distributes quite a bit of the material. Most of the major retailers will have what I do. And also, you can go onto my website at RebeccaParis.com and check out scheduling and see pictures of my dogs.
There you go. There's a picture of my dogs at my site as well at PMPNetwork.com.
Absolutely.
Rebecca Paris has two C's in the Rebecca and two R's in the Paris. .com, and also they can go to lushlife.com as well, right?
Yes, to my manager, John Levy, Incorporated in L.A. And John is a very prolific man. He's in his 80s and was the very first black personal manager in the country. And he's handled every jazz name that you can possibly imagine, from Cannonball Adderley to Nancy Wilson. And he's still with Nancy and was with Joe Williams right up until he died, and has managed Shirley Horn and Carmen McRae and Sarah and all these different people. So he's quite prolific and has written a wonderful book called Men, Women, and Girl Singers, which is the story of his illustrious career, and it's a wonderful testimony to who he is.
Yeah, you mentioned it?
Huh?
Are you mentioned in the book?
No, I came into it right after the book was finished.
Oh, too bad.
Right after the book was finished. John and I have been in business for about a year. Not even, I don't think.
Timing is everything, though, Rebecca,
isn't
right?
It, though?
Yeah, Rebecca Paris, and again, you can see her February 8th through 10th at the Orpheum Theater in Foxborough. And if you check out RebeccaParis.com or LushLife.com, you'll get the rest of her schedule, and go see her if you have a chance. She's a wonderful talent.
And if you do want to come to Foxborough, the box office is quite reachable at 508-543-2787, which is 508-543-ARTS.
Here you go.
And all that information.
What a great commercial you just did. I'll send you a bill in the mail. Rebecca, it's nice to talk to you again.
Thanks, Mark.
Take care.
You guys all have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.